You guys hear me okay? Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, Owen, for asking me to speak. You can, there you go. Hi, everybody in the rooms and online. Hello. My name is Dawn, and I am an alcoholic. And hi. Hello. I am grateful to be here tonight. This is my, I didn't say anything before, but this is my first Al-Anon meeting. So when Owen asked me to speak, we spend time together at another meeting, and my home group is Love and Service in Pleasant Hill, and we spend time in this other meeting, and he told me about this meeting and asked me to speak, and I was grateful because I have you know, things that I love to share about this. I always felt like when people ask me to speak at AA meetings, I don't have a really exciting story about, you know, car chases and jail time and accidents and homelessness and anything dramatic. But what I do have is I have a long, slow journey through this disease as a child, as a daughter. And I have some great strength and hope to share too, based off of that. So I was really excited. So thank you, Owen, for asking me to share. So as I said, my sobriety date is June 1st, 2018, and Love and Service is my home group. I am very, very grateful to have Love and Service as my home group. It's a wonderful group in Pleasant Hill. And it was my first meeting outside when I got out of rehab. And so I'm grateful that I stumbled upon the meeting over at Love and Service. It was actually a newcomer meeting. And I felt like, you know, I qualified because I was new and I didn't know what I was doing. However, that meeting was not my first AA meeting. I had actually been going to meetings with my mother when I was around 13 or 14 years old. So that wasn't my first meeting. But if you would have asked me 5 years ago if I thought I'd be in AA, I would have thought you were crazy because I spent my entire life trying to get as far away from alcoholism as I could. So if you would have said you're going to end up there, I would have said you're crazy because it's the last thing I want in my life. And now today, standing here at 4 years sober, I'm not one bit surprised that I'm here, but I am now a better version of myself. I am living life better than I was 5 years ago. Life is not any easier, but I'm living it better because I now have a set of tools that I can use in this life to be, you know, a better member of society, a better person, a better employee, a better wife, a better mother. I have a husband who is not an alcoholic and not in the program. I don't like to say normie because really who's normal in the world? I have two teenage daughters. I think about, you know, when I was their age and what I was going through in my household. And I'm so, so glad that I can offer them a life that is far, far more just emotionally, physically stable than what I grew up with. And I always was afraid of being a parent because I had such a dysfunctional upbringing that I was afraid that I wasn't going to be a good parent. And I kind of just didn't blow it off, but it wasn't high on my priority list. My priority list involved trying to get farther in my life than my parents had been, successfully, emotionally, professionally. I wanted to be successful and have a degree and have a family and have a stable family. And that was my goal, was to do all the things that I wasn't raised with. But alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. So I grew up with my parents met in a bar. They got together, had me, and then had my brother quickly after. And then my mom was gone. I don't have any memory of my mother until I was really in middle school. She left, to, finish, you know, doing what she needed to do. She did end up getting into a program. And when I first started my relationship with my mother, it was in a sober living environment up in Santa Rosa. But I was instead raised with my father, so single parent. And we, you know, from this area around the corridor, 680 corridor, moved, you know, Pleasant Hill, Martinez, kind of moved around a little bit. And he struggled. He did the, you know, he was trying to do the best he could and living in this area. And of course, it was a lot better back then, but still a struggle for a single parent. And so we stuck close to his parents, my grandparents, and we eventually settled, I think, for the longest period of time that we were anywhere was in Lafayette, at the end of town, and some duplexes. Somehow we ended up in these duplexes where it was my grandparents here and then my dad and my brother and I over right next door to each other. So it was great because my dad was an active alcoholic. And so, you know, it was up and down, up and down. He never did get into a program. And so when he went off the wagon and, you know, didn't know when he was going to get home from work and didn't know what state he was going to be in, my grandparents were there to help take care of my brother and I. So I'm very grateful for that. At the time though, it just seemed very different than other families in Lafayette and going to those schools. It was, I always felt very awkward and very different and very I just didn't have a lot of confidence. And then always worrying about what was happening with my dad and, you know, wondering and you just stress. It was just the stress of that as a child. And so, always felt very, very different. And, you know, it wasn't until high school, that I just couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't. And I didn't have an option for Al-Anon, and I wish I would have, but I just didn't have that. And whether it was because, the tools weren't there or the resources or my grandparents just didn't know about it. I'm not quite sure at this point, but I could have used Alateen. That would have been great. So knowing that those resources are around now, is very encouraging. And I think that, you know, with my daughters in a very vulnerable, not vulnerable, but very impressionable, you know, and developing time, they're both in high school. It's just really great to know that resources like that exist. So I'm grateful for that now. But getting back to me and being in high school, I just needed to go. I needed to get out. There's nothing I could do in the situation. You know, I just felt powerless. I just felt like there's nothing that I'm going to be able to do. It doesn't matter how upset I get or how I plead and beg to, you know, my father to stop. It's not going to happen. And so I just decided, you know, the walls went up and the protective gear went on and the armor, you know, was there. And I really just wanted to get away and I wanted to live my own life. And I didn't want to be under this, you know, this depressing and just stressful, you know, environment. And so, you know, I ended up living with friends when I was in high school. I lived with friends just to get out of the house. To find some peace and to be able to study. I was into school. I did well. And I had a goal of, you know, going to university and getting my degree. I wanted to be something in nature, wildlife, marine biology, you know, I don't know, just something in nature. I had an affinity and a love for animals. And so that was my goal, was to finish, you know, high school. And, you know, I had a pretty normal high school experience. You know, I did things, I dabbled, I experimented, I went out a lot. But it wasn't terrible. There was one time that I got in a little bit of trouble with alcohol, but it was, nothing crazy. I mean, I really didn't even start drinking daily until my mid to late 20s. I mean, it really, like, and, you know, again, I was driven by this desire to just get away from my family and try to succeed and not be like them. And when I was in just going into high school, my mom living in this SLE, she wanted to start seeing us again. So that's when my relationship with her really began. My dad started taking us up to her for supervised visits at this SLE. And she looked great. I mean, she looked great. She looked amazing. It was wonderful. And I was really excited about starting a relationship with my mother, because until this time I had been raised by my grandmother, and, you know, she was doing the best she could. And I loved her very much. And she taught me a lot about, you know, classic style, and she'd take me shopping. And, but it was a generation ahead of, you know, where I felt comfortable. And so it was still kind of awkward, but she did great. And, you know, I feel like I have a appreciation more for the classics and, like, you know, swing music and orchestra music and classic style and just a lot of things that I think that it was directly a result of being raised by her. And I really appreciated that. And I was there, and I was actually her caregiver. In the end, I had the opportunity to come back and be her caregiver. She ended up passing away she had, you know, Alzheimer's and was in a home, but I was there with her until the very end. And so I'm very, very glad that we had that relationship. But starting one with my mother was also exciting to me, because I thought, oh, here's someone that's sober. Here's a sober parent. Great. And so, you know, my father started bringing us up there to visit, and, it was going well, and it was interesting, exciting, and it was great. But then I found out that my mother had, a boyfriend. And so, you know, here I am, this awkward teenager that just wants that family unit that's somewhat normal. And then I meet and start, you know, spending time with my mother, and then she has a boyfriend. And I had a lot of resentment about this, because I wanted her to myself. And so, you know, we started spending more and more time together, and I started developing a relationship with her long-term. We had to go visit, and it was on the weekends that I would be able to spend time with her, but it was a great escape from my home life, from my father. He was up and down and all over the place, and, you know, never really got into AA meetings. And for whatever reason, he just battled, you know, a lot of demons, a lot of, just a battle. You could see it when you looked at him. He was just not at peace. And, so starting this relationship with my mother was amazing. And, you know, but I still tried to keep her, you know, close to me. And when the boyfriend would come around, I was like, over here, I already have a father, and he's a mess. I don't need another one right now. I don't care who you are, where you came from, what you stand for. I don't care. You know, I don't need another one. Two parents is enough as far as I'm concerned. So I really kept him at arm's length. And so they ended up moving in together, and I'd spend holidays and time with them. And, you know, he grew on me a bit, and he tried really hard. He really did. And he was a really amazing man. And it really wasn't until way later in our relationship and way down the road, after, you know, years, that I really started to really appreciate my relationship with him. So I am grateful that he was in my life. But at the time, it was just, the timing was really bad. And so, you know, again, wanted to get out. High school came and went. And when I graduated, I was gone. I was gone. I went down south, moved around, you know, met boys, you know, met this guy, met that guy. But throughout the time, my number one goal was to, again, I wanted to be successful. I wanted to get a college degree, and I wanted to have, you know, success and have a family and do all those things. So those goals were always there for me. And that's what kept me, you know, laser focused, to the extent that I was very selfish and self-centered, and I just wanted to get to that goal. And I did. It took me 10 years to get my college degree, and I probably went to like 8 different universities across the United States. I moved out of state. I moved, you know, I was in Nevada, I was in Louisiana, I was in Texas, and, you know, and then finally decided that I needed to come back to California, because those places are all great and everything, but I just missed the weather. I missed, you know, my friends. And so I came back to California, and they said, oh, you can't go finish your degree yet. You need to take some prerequisites in order to get into a four-year school back here in California. And I was like, what? Okay, what do I have to take? And I was a science major. My degree is in science. And they said, you need to take two public speaking classes and something else, some other humanities. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm a science major. Don't you understand? And they said, sorry, that's the prereqs here in California. So who would have thought that I'd actually be using that? So I did, I got my degree and came back and got a job, and everything was going great. I met a guy, and it was like the minute I set foot in California, things just were happening. For my parents, things were happening with them too. They were up and down, and you know, never really. For my mother, the sobriety stuck for a while. She had a solid program, and she was really into it and really doing a program. And then she started having some physical pain and some medical issues. And that kind of, she lost her way there. And both of my parents ended up, you know, passing away because of their diseases. My father's, you know, been gone now for 14 years. It's just too bad. It's terrible. He just couldn't find his way. And then my mother was about 5 years ago. Just couldn't find find that magic of AA, you know? So I'm just really grateful to be here and have all these tools and this fellowship around me. I'm just really, really grateful. When I got married, my father was there sober next to me, walking me down the aisle. And I don't know how that happened. Like, he was up and down all around all the time, but the one time that he needed to be there, he was there. My mom, on the other hand, came to my wedding shit-faced. Yeah, she was a mess. She couldn't even be she couldn't even sit in her seat during the ceremony. So this up and down and all around, and just, you know, it was just tragic. It was just too bad. It didn't matter what I did or how close I got or how far away I pulled. It had nothing to do with me. It really didn't. I knew that then, and that was fine, you know? And so I went on with life, you know, life happened. I got the job, I got the career, got pregnant, had the kids, had the house, did all the things, and was happy, and was doing life, you know? And, but then somehow alcohol found its way. How does it do that? How does that happen? I spent my whole life dealing with the effects of alcohol and the tragedy and the drama and the heartbreak and the pain and that, and then it happens. Somehow, I think I thought I was somehow immune or privileged or deserving or an exception or something, I guess. But from the first time I ever drank alcohol, I just loved the way it made me feel. It just took me to a place that just helped me, like, forget about things and just disconnected me from reality and the pain. And so, you know, slowly over time, it was really, you know, a very slow, gradual climb over the edge. It was kind of like, I like to call it, and my fellows from Love and Service have heard me say this before, but you know that game on Price is Right, with the climber. Got to make sure and not go over the edge or you're not going to win the prize. and that's how it was for me. You know, go long and stop and, you know, start, keep progressing. You know, the wine was my favorite. The wine was it. Wine's expensive. And when you drink as much as I do, you got to switch to the box because you can't afford it. So the box wine was the red flag. Yeah. and it became really, really important. Really important. Really had to have that wine and had to make sure that it was on the list, the grocery shopping list, had to have the wine. Get home from work and put the purse down and go right to the wine. Literally, purse down, get the glass. It was a whole thing. It was a whole routine. I had it down to a science. And I could drink a lot and be okay. Cause you know, you do it for long enough and you get, you know, you just get used to that. And, but it was always after work. I went to work and I took care of my kids and I did all the things that I needed to do. And then, you know, I was able to drink like that. And, it wasn't until, you know, life started happening and my parents were out of the picture and not in my life. And I thought, well, that's drama and the that's gone. Like my life is okay. I've done it. But then other life stressors started coming up and, you know, dealing with a spouse, you know, and marriage issue, like marriage, that's work. You don't just get married and then you're good. Like marriage is work. And if you're not willing and able to work at your marriage, then yes, it's bad things are going to happen. Especially when you have a husband that works the night shift for 15 years. You start to grow apart and you start to lose touch and you stop talking enough and you start filling the emptiness or the silence with other things. That's what we do, right? As human beings, we fill space with stuff, right? We fill our garage and our closets with stuff, right? Because it's space. We fill our minds with thoughts when there's nothing else there. Or when there's no answers, you fill the space with whatever. And if my life was a big jar of rocks, big rocks, alcohol was the sand that was being poured into my jar of rocks. And it was filling up everything. It was filling up my motivations, my willingness, my patience, my, you know, everything. It was taking over. Slowly but surely chipping away. And you know, what happened is, you know, I started abusing alcohol. I started drinking more than I needed to be drinking. And I started acting out and doing and saying things and not doing and saying things and just checking out and just, you know, stress about my life and where I was going and, you know, money and all those things just started just piling up and alcohol just, it was the, what I was pouring on top of all my feelings. And so, I went and just started acting like a terrible human being. I was doing terrible things. And it wasn't until like, I was endangering my children. And I had damaged my marriage, you know, going outside of my marriage and, you know, not being faithful and just looking for something to take away that pain. And instead of working hard at what I had right in front of me, exactly what I had worked for, it went just like that, up in flames. I went right over the edge, yodeler, down. It happened very fast. It happened over a matter of about 2 years that I just destroyed and burned down everything. And I was faced with losing everything that I had worked so hard to get. And that's when I asked for help. I finally, because I couldn't lose that. And so my family, they helped me. I have a wonderful, my husband and his family, they're wonderful people. I'm very, very grateful to be in the family. And they helped me. They got me into a program. I went into a detox. I went into a 30-day inpatient up in, Sacramento, and I walked into an AA meeting in treatment, And I sat in the back and I was a shell of myself. I had been in and out of the psych ward at County Hospital. I was blacking out. I was just, I didn't even know what had happened and I didn't know what to do. And I had lost the ability to make decisions and to really be involved in life anymore. I just really wanted to give up. And it was crazy because a few years before that, I was like, I was on a mission. I was in control. So I walked into that meeting and the woman speaking and telling her story was telling my story. And I totally let go. I burst into tears. I just was like, this is it. I'm home. This is exactly where I belong. Like this whole time, who would have thought this is where I was the whole time. I just needed to live my life and get there. And I was a model student and I have been the whole time. I work a really strong program and I am involved. I go to my meetings. I am of service. I am a sponsor. I have a sponsor. I do all the things. I do when I'm asked, I do the things because I know I grew up in AA. I know what you're supposed to do. I have no excuse not to be a model AA individual, right? I know I grew up like this. I have all the experience that anyone could ever need. So that's what I do today is I work a strong program and I'm grateful for every single person, tool, experience that I get. I'm there for my kids and I am open and my husband and I went through a lot of, therapy and trials and tribulations, but we are working hard. And so I'm very grateful for that opportunity. I know that my parents were, alive. I would have loved to have been an example for them. I wish they could see this, to see what is possible. So I would say, for those of you out here, I know that I'm an AA member speaking to a group of Al-Anon members, but I would say that, keep working this program because it's brilliant. It's a miracle. And it's just the greatest thing that has ever happened to me. And I'm super, super grateful to be here. So I'm going to say thank you very much again. And thanks for the opportunity.